it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour number two on this sunny, hot September day, and our friend Jimmy Jam Harris, the tremendous producer with Terry Lewis, endless Grammys, Hall of Famers, so many honors, and it's always a pleasure when Jimmy joins us, whether it's phone or in studio. It's great to see you, sir. We just were talking off air about your busy, busy day. Capture for the folks, and including your hat and why you came back to your hometown.
So the intent of me coming back to the hometown was to see my dad, Cornbread Harris, play his last gig at Palmer's Bar, which was closing after, I believe, 119 years.
Think about that.
Yeah, pretty crazy. but I noticed that on the same day, there was a Vikings game.
Mm-hmm.
And then, just freshly put on the schedule, there was a Lynx game. And I thought, okay, let me see if I can do the triple header. So
yeah.
I flew into town. I landed about 11:30. I got to the Lynx game. I missed most of the first half, which was a good half to miss from what I understand. But the second half of the Lynx game was absolutely amazing. And, of course, we got the win. I then took a quick nap, and then I went to the Vikings game.
Mm-hmm.
I only saw the first half of the Vikings game,
yeah,
which was, I'm glad I didn't see the second half. and then I went over and watched Cornbread, and as I said to you, Cornbread's performance was much better than the Vikings.
Okay. talk about Andrea, who's here.
Yes, Andrea Swenson, the book lady, as Cornbread calls her.
And the connection and how this all came together.
So Cornbread's book that Andrea wrote, is pretty cool. And Andrea was actually one of the people that kind of started connecting me back with my dad.
Yeah.
But I had come back to Minnesota actually to do, at Paisley Park, we did a taping for the Billboard Awards. And I asked her, do you have a way to get in touch with my dad? And she said, well, I know his manager and, you know, we can do that. And we set up a thing where I could get together with him and kind of reunite. And this is after 50 years of estrangement, by the way. That's not to bury the lead. We were estranged for 50 years. So we got back together. It was a great thing. And then I sent Andrea a picture, and I said, thank you very much. And mm-hmm. then she hit me, and she said, you know, I go to Cornbread's every Tuesday to compile things for a book that I'm writing. Would you mind zooming in? You know, and I said, no, I'd love to do that. And it literally turned into like a Tuesdays at Maury's thing where mm-hmm. every Tuesday on Zoom, we would tell stories. We would reminisce about certain things. Sometimes it'd just be a musical conversation where he'd sit at the piano and play, and I'd play something back to him. And she captured all, I think it was 40 or 50 Zooms that we did over this period of time to put the book together. And she's just part of my alignment of getting back together with my dad in such a beautiful way.
There are a lot of people listening right now who, for whatever reason, are estranged with someone close to them.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in that boat before.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, does this happen without Andrea?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. The fact that she was going to tell Cornbread's story, I think, was part of it. But also just her natural compassion that she has to realize that she kind of started off in one direction thinking she was going to write a book chronicling his life. And then it turned into being the person, the facilitator, like I say, of so mm-hmm. many things, of us yeah. getting back together. But what we realized was after the very first meeting that I had with my dad, I should say this because I was thinking about this earlier today. It was really my mom and dad, when my dad wanted to do music and my mom was like, no, you said you were going to give up music and just, you know, be
yep.
a dad and
right.
work a regular job. But I remember when I dropped out of high school, I thought my mom was going to kill me. And she said, as long as I see you really going for it. And that always struck me really weird because I was like, that's not my mom. But a few years ago, somebody said to me, do you think your mom let you pursue your dream because she didn't let your dad pursue his dream? And it made me realize, oh, wait, he gave up basically his career so that I could have my career.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about an apology or an explanation. Why did you leave when I was, you know, 15 years old? Or it was, forget all of that. Let me just say that I've raised my kids based on the lessons that you taught me as a kid. And my musical talent is directly because of you. And I just wanted to say thank you to him. And he said he felt euphoric when that happened, when we had that first meeting. And so, yeah, that's the thing. And I think it for a lot of people, I get it. Because but people want a reason why, and they want to. It's not that I agree with what he did, but I don't really question it. It's like you, everybody lives their life, I think, to the best of their ability. And that was a decision he made, that he left and he wanted to try to do music and pursue what he wanted to pursue. I totally understand that now.
So, what was the hardest part of the first conversation?
That there was no hard part of the first conversation.
Really?
I had my Yeah, I had my son Max with me.
Okay.
My younger son.
Yep.
And one of the things that was really funny was that, so whenever I'd be out in public at the Grammys or whatever, they would always be, my kids would always be yanking on me, like, Dad, do we always have to be the last ones to leave? You know, do you have to sign every autograph? Do you have to take a picture with everybody?
Yeah.
And I would always go, yeah, because, you know, people, this might be someone's only chance to interact with me and, you know, let's do this, right?
Yeah, right.
So, of course, we go, because Max is with me. So Cornbread starts saying to Max, I said, here's the thing. I said, Max, I said, I get this from my dad, because when he would go on gigs, he'd always take a picture with everybody. He'd sign autographs for everybody. And I'd always go, why do we have to do this? And my dad, right on cue, goes, yeah, because you don't know how far these people have come to visit you and, you know, whatever, whatever. And I said, okay, Max, you see where I get it from, you
yeah.
know? So that's kind of the thing, is that, you know, we're just kind of the product of our parental people. And I really was a great balance of my dad's musical talent, I would say, and sort of my mom's strictness or whatever, mm-hmm. discipline or whatever, golden rule, you know, treat, you know, people the way you want to be treated. And I'm a beautiful balance of the two. And a really cool thing happened, too, recently. Was,
sounds like a great combination, by the way.
It's a great combination. And the cool thing that just happened for me, too, in Minnesota, that was very cool. So I dropped out of high school, as I mentioned,
yep.
and I went back to my high school about a month ago now, 100th anniversary of Washburn High School.
Yeah.
And I got my high school diploma.
We talked about that. That's,
oh, my
that's
God.
Amazing.
It's the best. It was the most amazing thing. So, you know,
I
this
think that means you need to move back.
I know.
Come
well,
on.
You know, I love, listen, I tell people all the time, I love excuses to come back.
Yeah.
To Minneapolis. And so watching Cornbread play his last gig at Palmer's was a great thing. The Vikings hosting me was great. The Lynx hosting me was great. I love excuses to come back to town. And, you know, I this is my hometown. I just,
yeah.
I love being here. I love the people here. I love coming and seeing you. It's just great. I love being back here.
Jim and Jam Harris is with us. Andrea's book, by the way, Deeper Blues, The Life, Songs, and Salvation of Cornbread Harris, still available. And absolutely worth it. What did you think of your dad's performance last night?
It was amazing. And I got to
He's
play
98.
Drums with him. 98 years old.
Yeah.
I got to play drums with him, which I haven't done. I haven't played drums with him since that's what, when I was 12 years old. That was my first professional gig, was playing drums with, for my dad. But the last few times we played together, I just played the keyboards with him.
Yeah.
But last night, there was a little kind of end-of-the-night scuffle type of thing.
Okay, I read about that a little
yeah.
bit. Can you tell me what happened?
Well, I guess one of the bartenders had been working all day, and they opened yeah. really early, I think 10 or 11 in the morning.
Because as you said, this is goodbye.
This is
after
goodbye.
120 years.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think one of the bartenders was a little overserved.
No.
And and they started throwing ice at the crowd, but in throwing ice at the crowd, it was hitting some of the horn players and stuff. And they, like, set their horns down and said, we're not going to play and have our equipment damaged and that
yeah.
kind of stuff. And the band
right.
just all kind of quit at
yeah.
that point.
Right.
But my dad just kept at the piano and just kind of started playing. And so as he was playing, then the guitar player kind of joined in and then the bass player kind of joined in. And I looked at the drummer and I just kind of looked at him and he kind of looked at me and we just kind of nodded at each other. And he got up from the drums and I went behind the drums and started playing.
That's great.
And that's how we ended up closing the night. So it calmed everybody down and
yeah.
got everybody in a good place. But it allowed me to do something I hadn't done since I was 12 years old, which is play drums with my dad.
What a beautiful story.
Yeah.
Jimmy Jam Harris in studio with us. It's always such a pleasure to have Jimmy on the show, as he's been on with me, I don't know, for 33, 34 years,
yes.
something like that.
Yes, sir.
And Jimmy's in studio with us. Let's take a short pause. Come back with more right here on CCO.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, playing Jimmy music all day long on the show. The great Jimmy Jam Harris is here. Let's say, okay, when did you guys go to L.A.? I'm trying to remember. What year did you officially kind of take flight time up there?
2002.
2002.
Because, yeah, it's interesting you're playing Janet. So the All For You album that we did with Janet was one of the last records we did in Minneapolis. That was 2001.
Yeah.
So I think 2002 is when we kind of made the official pilgrimage to L.A.
What do you think happens if you stay here? Because obviously you guys were having enormous success already.
Yeah.
If you just, both of you say, you know what, we'll go out there a little bit. We're still going to make Minneapolis our base. How would life be different?
Well, I wouldn't still be married because my wife is from L.A.
Yeah.
And when I mentioned to her, actually Terry's wife is also from L.A., and when Terry was actually the one that started working in L.A. before I did, and he would call me and go, Jim, it's buzzing out here, man. You got to come out here. And I remember saying to my wife, I said, how would you feel about moving to L.A.? And before I could even get the sentence out, the bags were being packed, you know. So that was part of it. But the other thing, though, was it was harder to get people to come to Minneapolis because after 9/11 happened, the idea of just hopping on a plane and going somewhere, that all changed. And at the same time, record company budgets were different. You had Napster coming in with file stealing and all of that. There was a whole lot of changes that were taking place. And Terry and I were at a point career-wise where we wanted to branch off more into doing music for films and television. And that was very much an L.A.-based thing. I mean, we got away with doing it for a while in Minneapolis, but it turned into an L.A. thing. So I think it would have definitely changed our trajectory, you know, to not be able to be in L.A. Matter of fact, one of the first things that happened was we had a meeting with Jeffrey Katzenberg, who was working on an animated film. And I'll never forget, he showed us the film. He said, I want you guys to do some music for it. We said, great. We walked out. Another girl saw us and said, oh, my God, we got this. We need this end title. Do you know India Arie? And we said, yeah, India Arie's got this song. Would you guys produce it? And we looked at each other and we said, that wouldn't have happened in Minneapolis.
No.
So that was one of those things where we really needed to be in the environment in order to do it.
Okay, I want to talk to you about consuming music. I still remember you were on a flight with us when we were traveling with the Wolves, and you came over and said, I want you to show you something. You're the first person to ever show me an iPod. Mm-hmm. You had one very early.
Yep.
And you said something like, this is going to change everything about music.
Mm-hmm.
And it did. Mm-hmm. And obviously, a couple of years later, the iPhone would come out. How do you consume your music right now? And where do you think we're headed the next 5-10 years, just for people wanting to listen to a variety of music?
Yeah. Well, listen, I think options are good, and you definitely have options. The one thing I will say is that I listen to a lot of music. A lot of my music discovery, quite honestly, is social media, because I will follow an artist that I really like, and then I'll look and see who they follow. Who do they like?
Yep.
And I've always been the person that whenever I hear a singer that I like, I'm always into who wrote it, who produced it. I always want to know kind of the chronology of events that led up to it. But I always kind of find people like that. So my social media at the beginning of the day is always kind of music discovery. I kind of try to find stuff. And then I'll go to Apple Music or I'll go to Spotify and I'll just kind of do it and I'll download it or not even download it. I'll just stream it. So a lot of it is streaming to me.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain things, though, that I do want a physical copy of, so I will buy, if available, a CD or a vinyl just to have it because I physically want it. But I think
Do you prefer vinyl?
I don't prefer it. I think streaming is perfectly fine because it's convenient and it gives you instant satisfaction. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, probably one of my favorite apps of all time is Shazam because literally anytime you hear a song,
yeah,
it'll instantly give you the feedback on what it is.
Yes.
And I remember listening to the radio as a kid. I'd always wait for the DJ at the end to announce what song it is. And a lot of times they wouldn't. They'd go straight into the next song. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, if I just could know what that song is. But yeah. I find myself walking around, the grocery store or whatever, and I'll hear a song and I'll go, oh, wait, what is that? And I'll hit Shazam and it'll give me the song. So I love the idea of that. The convenience of it is great. Having the accessibility to music is great. The downside of it to me is it takes the importance of music away because you're not really making it an effort. Like when you had to go to the record store and make an effort to do it, it became more important to you.
And also, if you go to the record store, you might be exposed to a lot more information.
Yes.
When you're having a conversation with somebody who works there who's well-versed in the topic.
Exactly.
And you connect in a lot of different ways, and all of a sudden another customer joins the conversation.
Yeah.
That's a great part that we miss out on.
Yeah. And I think, the few record stores that still exist, I mean, Fetus is still here, which is, thank goodness. Amoeba is still out in L.A., which is great. So there's a few that are still there, and they're great gathering places to talk about music because, you're with people that, you may have diverse taste as far as what you like, but you all agree that you love music. And that's a great audience to be.
Jimmy Jam Harris in studio, because you mentioned grocery shopping. What kind of grocery shopper is Jimmy Jam Harris?
I'm basically Uber Eats for my wife.
Yeah.
So whatever she gives me the list, and I just go, and then when I check out, I still like to go to an actual person to check out, because of course you can self do it now.
Yeah. We're kind of insisting on the self checkout too. 10 is your max.
Oh yeah, yeah.
For self checkout.
Oh, I'll do some self checkout.
Yeah.
Like if it's just a couple of items.
You're not going up there with 30, are you?
Oh no.
Is this to be?
Oh no, I got to talk.
I mean,
no,
it's the end of our 32-year friendship. Or something.
Oh yeah. No. I want to actually interact with somebody and have them question why I'm buying this brand of something or whatever, and I just go, "It's my wife. This is what my wife likes."
Right.
I love grocery. I do it almost every day because my wife likes to cook. She cooks three or four times a week. She still likes to cook, and so I.
Okay, what kind of cooker are you?
I don't cook.
Don't cook
at all. No, I can listen. The microwave, I can fry that up pretty good. But no, I just
grill.
I don't cook.
Do you grill?
No, you know what? My son does. My sons love to grill. They love to cook. And my daughter, too. My daughter loves to make she's a big salad person, so she makes some of the most exquisite salad. My son, Max, actually, him and his girlfriend have an Instagram that's called Food Girl Food Boy, and they basically make all these because Max is diabetic, so they figure out how to make food that tastes good.
Oh, yeah.
But not using sugar and different kinds of flours and different kinds of things like that. And they made pancakes the other day. They were amazing. With no carb pancakes with, low syrup and, all that. So good.
Okay, so if somebody's listening right now, it goes to Food Boy.
Food Girl Food Boy.
Food Girl Food Boy. Okay, I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, check it out. See what they do. And they do a little bit of everything. And now people have them they're really good at sweet. Well, they do sweet stuff. They do all kind of different stuff. But people that are having birthday parties and stuff, they'll have them make their cake or their cupcakes and stuff. And it's exquisite.
Yeah,
it's really good.
Great.
It's really great food. So they love it. It's kind of a product of the pandemic. They were sitting around with nothing to do, and they said, we like food. We're going to figure this out, and that's what they did.
Last couple of minutes with Jimmy Jam Harris. We appreciate it coming in. Okay, when you wake up on a day when you're back in LA and you're working, does work give you that same feeling as it did 10, 20, 30 years ago?
It gives me a better feeling.
How come?
Because I'm so appreciative of the gift I have to do it. I wake up every day. My first thought is, I thank God for another chance. I don't know what I'm going to do with that chance, but I'm appreciative to have it. And then I let the day just kind of take shape. Sometimes I know kind of what I'm going to do. Sometimes I don't. But I just appreciate the opportunities because we're in so many things. We're doing a bunch of storytelling things on the documentary side of things. We're doing a bunch of live shows now, which we've never played our own catalog. I mean, we did the thing at Taste of Minnesota.
Yeah.
But now we're beginning to do that. We just did 7 shows in Japan. We just did a show in Atlanta over the past couple of weekends. So now we're beginning to do more of that kind of thing. So there's all kinds of things that we haven't done yet that I wake up every day and I'm excited to do those, besides just, writing and producing, which I still love to do. And I get to do it with... I just work with Michael McDonald and Kenny Loggins. Like, those are people who I grew up with.
What did you do with those gentlemen?
So we did a song with Charlie Puth for Charlie Puth's new album. Yeah. And And but Charlie called me and said, "Hey, do you know Michael McDonald?" I said, "Yeah, I do. Can you think you can get him on this record?" "Yeah, I think I can." So I love being able to connect people together. And that's, so it's a fun thing. So I wake up, I love what I do even more now because I'm just so much more appreciative of it.
Is there still a certain individual or a certain group out there that you really want to work with, and for whatever reason, it just hasn't worked out?
Oh, there's a ton of them. I have a whole list of them in my phone under a file called One to Work With. Top of the list is Sade.
Yeah.
And Sade, you probably asked me that 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and I've had the same answer.
Yeah.
She's still the top of the list to me. But it'll happen to me if it's supposed to. Well, the interesting thing is sometimes I hear somebody and I love what they do. That doesn't mean I want to actually work with them.
Yeah.
It just means I just love what they do.
Right.
Sometimes I hear somebody and I love what they do, but I feel like I could maybe help them. I don't want to use the word better because that's kind of, you know, subjective.
Mm-hmm.
But I just feel I have something to contribute. And I feel with Sade, I have something. And I should, when I say I, it's we, it's me and Terry.
Yeah.
We have something to contribute that would enhance what it is that she does. Because we think we get it. And it's not just to her, by the way. It's the band, Sade. It is a band. So I think that's what I always think about. But yeah, there's a ton of people like
that.
Okay,
with Sade, have you come close at all? Or?
No, not really. No.
I'd like to say Sade is on line one right now.
Exactly. Well, I'm sure she knows. And, you know, she at one point, I don't know whether he still manages, but Roger Davies, who managed Tina Turner back in the day, also managed Janet. And I remember at one point, he was waiting for me to send him some Janet mixes on something. And I said, "Hey, man, can you send me the new Sade record?" He says, "Man, I need the Janet mixes." And I said, "No, but Sade." And he's like, you know. So anyway, he knows what a big fan I am. So
it's cool. Always a pleasure to see you. I love that you're doing so well, and I appreciate when you come in studio on a busy day like this. Thank you so much, my friend.
I appreciate it. Can I make one plug?
Of course you can.
I just want to say, first of all, I want to thank everybody that's read the Cornbread book.
Yeah.
And thank you for allowing us to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I do want to say it is now available as an audiobook.
Oh.
So if you're at Amazon or Audible or wherever you get your audiobooks, this is amazing. It's more like a podcast.
Yeah.
It's myself. It's Andrea.
Okay.
It's my dad.
Oh.
It's his songs.
Oh.
It lays out a whole thing. I started listening to it the other night, and I learned so much.
Very different approach than a normal, typical audio.
Yes, very different approach. And even if you've read the book, if you've already read the physical book, the audio book will change your life.
The book itself, Deeper Blues, The Life, Songs, and Salvation of Cornbread Harris. Get the audio book. That sounds great.
Oh, my God. It's amazing.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you, man.
Jimmy Jam Harris right here in studio on CCO.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly outside of Cleveland, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.